and fear in his wife. And he, for how he forgets us, especially Srimati Radhika. Dhawan became dumb and like a wood
wooden stick.
And then he was praying that I should be the dust of Gopi's lotus feet. I want to pray even a dust of only one particle of that dust, that I should be in Vrindavan and I should make so much austerities for long, and then I will be qualified to pray Gopi's lotus dust. And that is why even today he is in Vrindavan, in Radha Kund, nearer, in Kushamit Sarovar, in Uddhav Kund. He is even waiting for that. So how glorious the service of Gopis to Krishna is. So our last aim should be like that. And then we will come down how to help. If you are doing anything for this, having this MO that I will have to take this, then it will be Radha Anuga Bhakti, otherwise very good. So very rare person devotees are of Radha Anuga. We are all among Vaidhi Bhakti. We should try to do Vaidhi Bhakti of Krishna, and by any Sobhagya, fortune, we'll have the association of erotic Vaishnav like Sukadeva Goswami, Narad Goswami, Rupa Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, even Bhakti Vinod Thakur and his line. Then we can come anyhow, a very little greed for this thing, and then he may be qualified for. So in the Chaitanya Bhakti Swami Sindhu, he has told what is sadhan. Now you should come down.
Chalish minute
ho gaya hai. Achha. Then something rest and then any question? Tumhi bolo.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Singapore and then will again return to India. I passed so much, so many days here. The devotees have served all devotees so well here. No problem at all. All help is in this my preaching. So I am better to all, especially to the devotees who have come from so long distance to help me. For them, I am so much obliged. But I have come to serve our Gurudev, the Bhakti Prajnana Kesava Goswami Maharaj, Shiksha Guru, the Bhakti Vedanta Swami. And I am happy that in mission I am some extent and successful. I am happy that so many sincere devotees who are thinking themselves to be very far away from Krishna consciousness, they have come in our touch. And I have tried to help them. And for this I am so much happy. But I think that for this reason also some may be opposite. But nothing to do. I am helpless. So I can only beg for forgiveness of them. I have no intention to do anything to them. Only to preach this real thing. What Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is always wanted to do, for some he was wanted to do. But even in these five activities, preaching, it may be that some were upset and some may be upset and have some heart problem. But I have no intention to disturb their peace. So if I have done such things unwillingly, then I am begging pardon for this to all devotees. And who are not here, I think this my prayer to approach to them, and they will be very kind to me to forgive for this. I want to gather all devotees wherever they are in the whole world, whether in India or here, without cost and credit. We should try to help them all. This is the duty of all devotees. So, I think that this should be agree with our this point. But I know that it is very hard for me. Anyhow, I am so much obliged to you all that having so much suffering here also in very, very rich person, having so many facilities in your houses, very good, but giving up all these things. But me here in for four extended period, must could have got also some. But yet, having no care for this, all these things, you are here. Not for one day. 3 weeks went in a, like a dream in a moment. So, and also, that is your all these things. Now, if anything you have to announce, you can announce, and then I will do. And today, I'm stopping my classes, and we will, if you will have any time to give class, give class how to attend these things, what should be our ways, and how we can do it by Bhaji Bhakti and Raganga Bhakti and all.
For all the devotees present, tomorrow we will go to Brisbane, and then you and us will be resting one day.
A little difficult, sorry. Then she explained to Dhruva that actually she could not help him, but only the Lord himself could help him, and he had to take shelter there. And when she gave him instructions, he asked, "How should I do that?" And she told him that the sages go to the forest. So the young boy, taking the advice of his mother, decided that he also would go to the forest. So it explains that Suniti, she advised her son to do this. So thus the mother and the son decided to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, because this was the only solution to all material problems. So then the boy left, and Suniti did not know what took place after that. And King Uttanapad at this point, he lamented very much that he had upset his son by not defending him in this difficult situation. So it describes also that Suniti, while the boy was in the forest, she was always praying. I'm very sorry. Very difficult purport. Perhaps somebody else should read the rest of the purport, page 189. difficult to say anything further. Shrila Prabhupada made it perfect. I'm sorry. I think I'm unable to continue the class. If we could have some questions, maybe I could become a little more self-controlled. Yes. Yes. He went on to become more advanced in his spiritual master, yes. And he always remembered that that was where he got his first hint from. And it's also said sometimes that she was his spiritual master in previous births, but she's come back in this situation to give him that advice. And so he was always in connection with her, even though he was the one who became famous. Any other points? Yes. Wouldn't, I'm sorry. Just a sentimental attachment, you could say, just a bodily attachment. Yeah. Well, in India, we see the culture is so strong that the parents are delivered by their offspring because of their attachment. At least they deliver them to wherever they are. Now, mostly they're not going back to Godhead. So you see, in India, the family becomes so strong because wherever the parents are thinking of their children and they keep taking birth, kind of in connection with each other. And I remember speaking to one family in Vrindavan who was explaining how they had some instinct that they had been born together many times. I don't know if that's common, but you can understand how it naturally would take place. Whatever you're thinking of at the time of death would determine your next birth. So they would be thinking of each other, and again they'd meet in different relationships. So yes, he would be thinking like that, but just like we see if somebody's following a bogus guru, or follow his guru to wherever he goes, if he's, as Prabhupada said one time about Sai Baba, what will be the destination of those who are following him? Which the Prabhupada said, well, he will go to hell and his followers will go with him. So Dhruva Maharaj was going the opposite way, so he was able to do that. So Srila Prabhupada's making the point that if one of his disciples goes, he can go also. I don't know if it indicates that. That I don't know. Well, his father didn't help him. That was why. Yes, I think he'd already gone to the forest. And also his father was capable of helping himself. That was another point. It explains that Suniti wasn't capable, so therefore he did it. So this is the point of why he felt responsible. Yes. That means they should raise their son very carefully. And they should give him lots of sweets. So he feels very obliged. You should make sure that he feels thoroughly obliged to you and say, no, I don't want anything in return. I'm just loving you out of the sentiment of the goodness of my heart. And then at the appropriate time, you tell him what you wanted. It means that you should develop such a relationship with your children. You should try to help them in every way that you can to become Krishna conscious. And you should pray for the intelligence and the instinctive idea how to do that. And then you should hope that they will reciprocate by doing the same thing to you at the end of your life. Because just like I was present when my father was very sick in hospital, and I was there, I'd come to see him, and we had had some Krishna conscious relationship. So I was trying to chant to him and tell him something that I had read, and he was listening a little bit. Then my brother came in, and he was also trying to give him, he was in difficulty, what he thought was most valuable to help him. So my brother started telling him, don't worry, Dad, you'll be out of hospital soon, you'll be able to watch the footy again, and we'll watch television together, and we'll see the cricket together, don't worry. And so he was thinking from his experience, what is the best thing I can say to comfort my father right now? That was all he could come up with. So that was the type of relationship that they shared, now being returned to the father. So we have to make sure that the relationship that we share is increasingly centered around Krishna. And that's our individual responsibility to figure out how to do that. But if we want to do it, Krishna will give intuitive ideas how to proceed in that path. Yeah. it's often very helpful. I know I first started chanting in Australia, and I joined in America, and so first thing was that I had a chance to get my head together without my mother crying and saying, what are you doing, don't do this. And they had a chance to sort of like not have to see me all the time in a changed way. And then I had a chance to kind of come back in their life as a different person, and they accepted that. And so now I come once a year and see them, more or less once a year, visiting to see my mother. And over the years she's began to appreciate deeply what is Krishna consciousness. But I think if I was around the corner, you know, she'd want to talk about all kinds of things. And, you know, talk about the weather and talk about the politics and this and that. And then I wouldn't have a chance to preach to her because she would hear it, because she'd be too familiar. So it has worked out that way. But I see other cases where it works out very favorably because the parents are near and they can be cultivated. And they can even become devotionally inclined. They can even come to the temple. So it can be either way. But oftentimes that instruction is given because the person, they may be not so mature in their guidance, but they see that your attachment is affecting your Krishna consciousness at that point. So Krishna can arrange to give you an instruction in one direction, and then he can change that instruction later once things are turned. So we should try to see Krishna's hand behind that instruction rather than just limiting it to somebody's neophyte mistake. That will help us. Any other questions? Changing and developing. Yeah. I was told that one should be so close to Guru that by heart, your heart's touch, and that by heart and soul you should be connected intimately. It should not be a formal relationship. So when this conversation I was overhearing was going on, the other person said, well, that's very rare. And then the person speaking said, yes, but that is what is wanted if you want to come to the topmost perfection. You have to have, it has to be that close. Like two souls in one body, it has to come to that stage. So it will evolve like that if the guru and disciple want that. And when it comes to that stage, then spiritual life becomes so simple. Because you just automatically, everything flows through. It's considered like the example I gave of Krishna's flute, that if there's no impediment, there's nothing in the way, there's a longing between the two souls to serve in that way, then it's like the flute, the music, the air can pass through and make a wonderful sound. So that's what one looks forward to, or should look forward to, in developing a relationship with somebody as good. It said that when one comes to the Madhyama platform, then he should see Guru as very near and dear, and not as I am very low and he is very high. But in the Kanishtha platform, he has to see like that. And therefore there's some kind of, there's a lot of reverence in the relationship. And that reverence is not so comfortable, it's not so satisfying as the Madhurya. It's Aishwarya, but Madhurya comes later. One has to qualify by the practices. And he may qualify himself before accepting the Guru. He may accept the Guru on a very high level automatically. He doesn't have to work within the relationship. It begins on that level. If you're not qualified, yeah. Because from the intimacy, when one is not sincere enough, your familiarity will come in. And then from that familiarity, you'll think, well, you know, I'm just like him, he's just like me. And then you'll see him as an ordinary person. And you won't be able to recognize that fact that Krishna is working through this person. I heard in class recently someone said it was very nicely that Krishna will empower that person to deliver that disciple. And by that empowerment, he's also within the heart of the disciple and the guru, and he can recognize how much that disciple is taking deeply what he's giving through the mouth of that person. And so he will reward the disciple. He'll reward them with further and further knowledge by the mercy of guru. And even when that person is not present, that disciple will be able to see how it is a guru who is coming through this person, through that person, and so forth. And there's a wonderful essay by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur called Be Humbler Than a Blade of Grass. It's a Vyasa Puja offering, in which he describes that if I don't think of my guru at every beginning of every hour, of every minute, of every second, then I will fall into a greater inconvenience. And then he describes, I'll become busy running from my bath. I'll become busy wondering how to present a cold. I'll become busy worrying about how to take care of my body if I don't think of my guru at every moment like that. So we think, oh, that's really tough. But then we become busy with the other inconvenience of trying to think all the time, control our mind. It's going everywhere. But that skill to be able to think like that, that comes with proficiency in devotional practices. And it can be that one has performed those practices in a previous verse. So he's already solid. So he comes in at that point and he gets further guidance up and up. But when it comes to that platform, then devotional service goes very quickly. That quality of relationship is established. And nothing impedes him. Even impediments don't impede him, because he sees in that some sign from his guru to teach him something. He sees him everywhere. So this is what we should long for. We should work towards that kind of relationship. The relationship should become so loving, like you see between a father and son. There's no more any question, because the son has become so loyal, and he's so much, the love is so established between the father and the son, that there's no longer really any difference of level. You know, the father doesn't think, oh, I'm taking shelter. Naturally, it all happens naturally. So they change their roles all around, like we see Krishna and Arjuna, and it becomes so friendly. And then what happens is we see that the disciple, when he becomes so qualified, before the father even speaks, the son knows what the father wants. Like when we heard about the story of Madhu Mangal, you know, Krishna knew, if I give this Samantaka jewel to Balaram, he loves me so much, he'll know exactly what I want to do with it. So by meditating on the person who has helped us like that, and this can be Shiksha Guru, Diksha Guru, it can be parents also. So any of these relationships, if Krishna sends you help through someone, you have to take that very strongly and cultivate that, because it's a sort of an arrow pointing in the right direction. You know, when you have these treasure hunts and they have all these little, you know, signs, there'll be an arrow on a tree or something like that. When you find one, you have to really work right there, because that's your clue to your next step. So it's so important that. And this is the nature of guru tattva principle also. It won't only come always through one person. But that principle is coming either from Nityananda Prabhu or Srimati Radharani. They are the two personalities who send gurus according to the inclination of the person. So we have to see it coming in that. And they are Sri Guru. Sri Guru Charana Padma coming from there. Yes, always. Yes. Yes. That's the sign that the person is more advanced, that they never, ever, ever think themselves more advanced. But others can perhaps see, oh, this person is so advanced. And the guru will love that one so much, because they'll never transgress that. But the one who's less advanced will think, I'm more advanced than my guru. That's a sign of his less advancement. Because as one proceeds, he feels himself less and less and less and less qualified. And that's a painful feeling, to feel that you're getting less and less qualified, to feel yourself being stripped of all the things that you think make up you, you know, and make you really somebody also. So as these things are being reduced, it's a painful experience. So one has to have so much love for that person who's asking them to undergo that, or they have to already be very much advanced, because then they already have a realization, oh yes, I have to go through this process. Because it's stripping away the false ego. It's like peeling off so many conceptions of yourself. So unless one has enough of something else inside, you won't be able to go through it. So then you go very, you know, carefully, very slowly, carefully, it goes step by step. So Krishna's arranging the medicine for each person at their own rate, and they should take it at that rate. They shouldn't become envious of somebody else who can take more, and they shouldn't want to take less because somebody else is taking less. They should want their advancement to go at optimum personal speed. And pray that it be personally, you know, they feel the personal connection with Krishna through their Krishna life. Because we all have our own personal development. Any more questions? This is a very nice question. They're in one sense non-different because they're both of Vishnu Tattva. But some personalities have more of a connection with Srimati Radharani, they're according to their eternal Swarup, and some have a connection more with Gaura-Nitya Nityananda from this. So they will vacillate towards one naturally, spontaneously, and it's according to their eternal destination. So it's very mysterious, and it may, and for the ordinary person, they may not think about these things. You know, they may just be, you know, they just go on with their devotional life, but they're usually not talked about. But occasionally they're brought out into the open. But one simply has to, if he has no inclination of anything, he should not imagine anything. He should just simply serve the simple instructions given to Dhruva Maharaj and by Prahlad Maharaj and by Srila Prabhupada. And then whatever he feels, he should confirm that with somebody who he trusts, who has the understanding of his particular situation. That guru will represent, it doesn't mean that one represents one and one represents another. It means that guru will represent whoever he's supposed to represent for that person. It doesn't mean you have to say, oh, he represents this, but I want this. Not like that. It's all adjusted by the tattva, the guru tattva principle. It's all adjusted on Krishna's side. We don't have to worry about it. We just have to learn how to serve someone faithfully and be ready to undergo the purificatory process of giving up our false ideas of ourselves. We have to pray for that. And there's actually something I have here, one very nice comment by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur that sometimes it's easier to read, to look at and read, because it's quite profound, but I'll read it out loud. He says that the first duty of the messenger of the Absolute is to cut off our wrong impressions and to change our heart, to change our taste. He said it is an unpalatable duty, but we shall make progress by this regulation. Then he says, you should be prepared for bitter words, for undoing whatever you have learnt. So Prabhupada used that example of the piano school in Austria, that when a student would come, the first thing they asked them was, have you ever played the piano before? And they would say, yes, I've been playing the piano for 5 years. And they'd say, very good. So the fees are double for you. And they'd say, why? I already know so much about piano. And they'd say, yes, but first we have to unlearn you. So we have to charge you double, half for unlearning and half for relearning. So this is the position. We think we know something, but we have to have that removed also. So guru is supposed to do that. So he says, you should only hear me and I will take all responsibility. Gita gives this assurance. So this is also why it's so important that our Vaishnava dealings become more advanced and not only Kanishtha. Kanishtha, as we pointed out so many times, means selfish. So selfish means, who's the center? I'm the center. Where's the question of serving Krishna? Where's the question of understanding what my guru is doing? Because the only thing that I can judge it by is if it makes me happy. And if it doesn't make me happy, then I can't accept it. And that's not a servant. Someone has to become a menial servant of the guru to get to this point. That means we have to also respect the other Vaishnavas very much. So then he says, you need not be anxious for looking after your interests. I will look after all your interests. When you have surrendered unconditionally, leaving aside all acquired impressions, I will look after your interests and you need not any more be anxious about them. So this is also what he was saying, that if we say, oh well, I can't surrender unconditionally and I can't think of my spiritual master all the time, there's other things I also want to do, you will have to look after your own interests. And while you're looking after your own interests, there'll be so much anxiety, because you'll be in competition with all the other selfish people who are also looking after their own interests, and they're trying to take a share of what belongs to Krishna. And you'll be guilty of some degree of dishonesty, because you'll be claiming something, this is my interest, this belongs to me. These possessions are mine. These children are mine. This house is mine. I earned it. I earned the money. I have the job. I put in the hard work. It's mine. But this is not the fact. All the things, everything, Om Purnamadaha Purnamidam, everything belongs to Krishna. It's all his and it belongs to him, and he expands it and he contracts it at his will. It's our ignorance that stands in the way of understanding this. So then he says, it is this temperament alone that will lead us to all that we desire. hearing of transcendental sound and descriptions is the medium that should be taken recourse to. This alone is wanted. Firm affinity for serving the Absolute is the one essential criterion for being successful. Firm affinity for serving Krishna has to come. Then he says, this is the first thing to pray for. So if we want to say, if we see I don't have firm affinity, pray for that. He'll give it. It's a gift. Go ask for it. He'll give it to you. The next thing is to abide by his providence and wait for his messenger. So we have to even wait for Guru to come in our life. We can't go out and say, like we can't take a flashlight and go out and say, where's the sun? I want to see the sun in the middle of the night. We have to wait for the sun to rise. So how much patience is there? And if one is very serious, then everything will be arranged perfectly by Krishna to take him all the way back to Godhead. I'll read one other thing that I used to read that used to amaze me. This is, again, the writing of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And I found when I read this, it brings up so many points that I can understand why Srila Prabhupada had to be the one who came to speak to us. Because Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's intelligence was so profound that it just sort of blows your mind. He spoke in such a way, he couldn't even understand what he was saying. And even Srila Prabhupada said, I couldn't understand what he was saying. And I used to think it's only because of his English, because he writes English like Sanskrit. And then people assured me, no, his Bengali is worse. You can't understand that either. Because he was taking the most intricate philosophical concepts and putting them in simple language. So this is not so complicated. If you read Brahma Samhita, you can find out how he'd like to use English. And you think you're reading another language. But this is simple, but the thoughts in this are very astonishing and they sort of spin your head. He says, the world stands in no need of any reformer. The world has a very competent person for guiding its minutest happenings. The person who finds that there is scope for reform of the world himself stands in need of reform. The world goes on its own perfect way. No person can deflect it by the breadth of a hair from the course chalked out for it by Providence. No person can deflect it by the breadth of a hair. It's all in Krishna's hands. And why is this so shocking? Because we all have a tendency to want to control. We want to control our own lives and the lives of others. And this assures us that we have no power to change anything and it's all perfect. And we're busy seeing how it's so faulty and we should do something about it. And this is saying, no, you don't have any faith that the Supreme Lord is controlling everything? Then he says, when we perceive any change being actually affected in the course of events of this world by the agency of any particular individual, we also know very well that the agent possesses no real power at any stage. So the agent is not the possessor of power, good or bad. That means when somebody comes like Hitler, they also were not the possessor of their power. We can't even hate them. Because they were also not working freely, just come and did a disastrous thing. What a terrible thing. No, everything is directly under the control of Krishna, good or bad. Then he says that the agent finds himself driven forward by a force belonging to a different category from himself. The course of the world does not require to be changed by the activity of any person. What is necessary is to change our outlook on this very world. This was done for the contemporary generation by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It could be known only to the recipients of his mercy. The change in outlook necessarily must also have been effected without involving any necessarily perceptible changes in the external look of affairs. So we see in the world today, people don't understand what this Krishna consciousness movement is doing. They don't understand how it's changing the outlook of so many people. And we saw when we first came in touch with devotees and we heard something from them, we changed completely. Our whole attitude to the world totally changed. Even though we may not be able to make the full transition at one step, but it changed so much that our parents couldn't understand us, our friends couldn't understand us. We had to tell them, I have to do something now. And they thought, well, why? I don't understand.